Welcome to In It to Win It. This is Stevie B.
And Dan G.
Dan G. So you just got back from Mexico.
Yes, barely.
Barely.
Barely. By some rigging.
Yes, yes. We're going to have to talk a little bit in code right here because, or else if we say certain words on a certain topic, we risk getting banned. But you came down with a cerveza sickness.
Yeah, that's the going phrase, right? The code.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Completely safe saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. Second round. I've had.
Yeah, you got it. You got it once before, like a year ago.
Oh yeah, the first time was miserable. I was like rigor mortis, you know, on my bed with chills, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second time, not so bad. Cerveza number two, not so bad. So the worst part about it was, I received it on the first day of my vacation.
Fun.
Yeah. In a resort with screaming kids and families.
Oh, good deal.
Yeah. 30 minutes from civilization.
I love being ill when you have nothing but screaming children around you. That's
well, I mean, cool. It wasn't that bad. It was just a resort. It was a family vacation. So it was just all families. It was just kind of had to do my due diligence for the family kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, it was pretty. Yeah, it wasn't that bad. I was fine. After a bit, but I kept pulling those positive tests and they didn't want to let me leave the resort. Yeah. So I actually had to escape because I was trying to get a negative test because I was fine.
Yeah.
And they didn't want me to leave the resort, which I can understand the rules and everything, but I'm like, I'm not getting stuck in Mexico, not on my watch. I got to get out of here.
Yes.
So I'm not going to lie. I escaped, hopped in a taxi. Took my cousin, used her room number, and escaped out of the resort. Traveled down 30 minutes to the city, and I was going around town trying to get tests.
Stuffing Vaseline up your nose, hoping that
I did. I was stuffing Vaseline up there. I'm like, come on.
Give me a negative.
Negative. Damn it.
Oh, craps.
Three times. Yeah.
Oh, maybe those exams are a little more accurate than we.
They're. You know what? I have to attest. I think they're a little more accurate than I gave them credit for. So, very stressful. My last couple of days before, I was actually sweating because I was like, I am stuck in this place and I'm not going to be able to leave for 2 weeks and everybody's going to leave.
Yeah.
I'm stuck with bad food and screaming kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they won't let you leave the country if you come out with a plus sign test, for a hangover, right?
Right. If you have the plus for the cerveza, dealio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're grounded.
You're basically grounded. Yeah. You're literally. Not going in. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Literally. So it has to be approved through the airline. So you need to send your test. Generally speaking, if you do pre-flight check-in, you know, you can send it and then they approve it. So I'm a terrible person. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Completely. I'm a super cerveza spreader.
Yeah. Super sinner.
Super sinner.
You had an accomplice too. You had a guy that was really good with Photoshop. So.
Yes, he's back in the States.
Yeah, he's gonna burn as well.
Yeah, he's gonna burn in hell as well. So yeah, I'm literally. I know probably like millions of people probably hate me right now, but oh well.
You're like the emoji.
Yeah, emoji. Whatever. So yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, I doctored it. I doctored it up.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you got back. Because we're going to talk real estate. You've been going gangbusters on that. And looks like
kind of fun.
I've been looking for the last several months and it looks like I got something in the middle of escrow.
Yes.
And hopefully it closes. We got the inspection coming up. If everything looks good, it looks like it's going to be a green light.
Yes.
So how has that been? I feel like we talk every day and you're kind of always complaining about how bad real estate agents are. You know, you say there's out of every 10, there's only one good one. How has that been?
Yeah, it's remarkable how many bad people there are out there doing their job. Yeah, but you know, it's actually good for it. Well, for the most part, it's good for, let's say, someone like myself. Yeah, just decided to sell some houses. And so, yeah, I've been selling a lot of them lately. So yeah, it's been good. But yeah, there's just a lot of bad, just, you know, bad communication, bad. Yeah, just the talent, I guess, so to speak, isn't that high.
Yeah.
At least in the area.
You told me a stat that I thought was unbelievable, but it makes a lot of sense now that I
you've know going more. Through the process.
Yeah. They said the, or you said most real estate agents sell 3.2 homes a year. And I'm like,
correct. Yeah. That's a national average.
That's a national. I'm like, how can they make you sold three in the last 2 weeks,
first 2 weeks of January. I've sold, actually as of today, it'll be three homes and we're at January 16th. Correct. Okay.
All right. So you've hit the national average here.
In a little over 2 weeks. Correct.
Okay. So I think of it like the guy that hustles gets the nut, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's as much work as you want to put in, and you can either be terrible and make three sales a year and make $40,000, or you can hustle and put out several in a month or even more and do well. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. You can do very well, very fast, but yeah, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of grind. It's a lot of hustle. It's a sales position. So right. I think a lot of people who come into, let's say, the industry, from what I've seen in this kind of short period of time, they just have, you know, oh, I can make money fast. It's a like fast money mentality, but they don't realize it's a higher end sales, you know, position.
Position. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to know how to do things. You have to know how to sell. You have to know how to negotiate. You need to know the laws. You need to. So there's a lot of variables there, you know, and you have to put the work in all things. You have to be a really good lead generator. You need to, I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, hats, so to speak.
Yeah. I wanted to give our listeners a thing of how to pick a good agent, right?
And
that
one.
Might be more so how to filter out the 90% and get down to the 10. And the first one I wrote down was, do they call you back?
It sounds
very simple, but apparently it's not very common.
No, it's really not. So yeah, it's just someone on a basic level that'll just, you know, call you back, or just, you know, availability, you know, that's number one, you know. And when you call them, do you text them? Like, do they call you back? Do they text you back? Do they, so that's, and you find that stuff out. You'll find that out real fast.
Yeah. You gave an example of an agent that wouldn't call their customer back while they were in escrow.
Yeah. And that was amazing.
Wow. That is completely unacceptable, but I got to believe from the client's perspective, there should have been some red flags leading up to that point. You know what I mean? Like, if they don't call you back when it's critical, you probably had a lot of missed text messages and you know, they don't work on the weekends or something.
Yeah,
you know,
something.
Leading up to that, that should have clued them in, you know, I imagine.
Yeah, but, that was, and I saw it firsthand. I'm like, wow, this person is in escrow and he was fired from his position because of it. It just was so bad that there was just things that need to happen. Things need to be cleared. There's work that needs to be done while a person is in escrow.
Yeah.
And as a agent, you know, there's a lot of things that need to happen that you need to answer. You need to fulfill a lot of things. And yeah, not calling the client back is pretty huge.
Yeah. That's kind of a bad one.
Yeah.
That's a fail.
Needless to say, didn't go through.
Yeah. That agent's looking for another job.
Yes. And they didn't get the house.
Yeah. Shocking. Shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also wrote down, do they understand loans? Okay. So, you know, make sure you have a basic level of understanding on the loans, because for most people, they're borrowing a significant amount of their net worth. Ask them some loan questions. Ask them FHA, conventional, pick their brain. What do interest rates look like to you right now? Just see if they have some type of basic understanding.
Something.
Of that.
Yeah. And they don't
do they have
to be
a loan
expert.
Guy that they could recommend?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
As like an agent, you should have a team of people behind you, you know, You should have a couple termite people you could call. You should have a couple inspector places you should call. You should have a couple loan people that, you know, you could refer to, you know. But yeah, just a simple basic under, look, the real estate, let's say agent, you know, doesn't need to be an expert in loans. He's not going to sit there and tell you when to buy down the loan or what the basis points, you know. We don't expect that. But, you know, you do need to understand on some kind of level, like, what's going on, at least, you know, a basic fact, like, hey, we're going into an inflationary period over this next year. More than likely, we're already there. Rates are probably going to go up. Like, they should know this kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, on a very basic level. So yeah, just some kind of understanding, not being an expert, but just have some kind of understanding.
Yeah. I'm reminded of a story. This was probably 10 years ago. I was going around with a gal. I went around with her once. She was a real estate agent, and I got in her car, and I'll never forget, there was a child seat in the back seat and a hamper, like a basket of
dirty clothes.
Laundry. Oh, yeah. God. It wasn't even folded. And I was so shocked. I couldn't tell you what houses we looked at.
But you remember the dirty,
was probably perfect for me. And
but you remember her dirty underwear.
I remember seeing the pile of dirty clothes in the car seat. And the whole time I could think, for the hour and a half this girl was driving me around, is I'm like, why didn't she just throw it in the trunk? Like, and then I got to thinking, I was like, well, maybe she has so
probably
much
full of more
in
clothes
in the trunk that it wouldn't fit in there. And I'm like, I just couldn't get over it. I wrote down unprofessional and appearance.
Well, Steve, let me just clarify something. You know, all agents are supposed to carry dirty clothes in their back of their car.
You're breaking the rule then.
I'm, you know, I don't carry dirty clothes in my car, and you know, I'm guilty of that. I'll be sure to stain up some good underwear next time.
Oh, bad agents won't ask any questions to the buyer or to the seller. Basically, they don't do any research, right? They don't find out what's the seller's motivation for selling? What's this guy's motivation for buying? Investment property? Is it owned by a company in New York, or has this guy lived here for 40 years and he just died and his kids are selling it? You know, to get the backstory can really you know, especially if you're in a competitive market like we are here, can kind of give you an edge as far as knowing about what range of prices could be accepted or has absolutely no chance, right?
Yeah, certain things like, hey, well, you know what, just like you said, you know, what's the motivation? You know, and asking a lot of questions is going to get you, it's going to get you somewhere. It's going to help you put together a better offer, right? You know, the more questions you ask, the more it's kind of like more bullets in the chamber. So, you know, the better off you can fire your gun. So, you know, example, hey, you know, maybe the person, you know, we had a situation where one seller, we found out he wasn't working. We found out he needed money. Well, so we turned that offer into cash. We made it a 10-day close as opposed to, like, you know, a 21 or 30-day close, right? So he's going to get his money. Like, that was the motivation for him. That worked. But by not asking, he was kind of, I don't know if handicapped, disabled, but there was something happened. And that was part of the reason that he needed to sell. But he needed money. And again, it's just asking questions so you can put things together better. 2 weeks, what we call a rent back period, meaning giving the seller, you know, a couple of weeks, you know, after everything closes to basically get his stuff together, you know, because it, you know, depending on the situation, if it's a family or, you know, sometimes they need just a little extra time. It's like, would that help? Yes. In that case, it did help to give him a couple of weeks so he could, you know, basically clear out his house. So putting that in the offer, making it cash, whatever it is, finding the motivation to present a good offer, you know, and you're only going to do that by asking a lot of questions.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay. What can a buyer or seller, a client, do that would be? How could you be a better a buyer or seller? You know, like you were telling me stories about how you get down right to the end, and they're like, Can you take, instead of taking 2%, can you take 1.5%? And they basically just try to nickel and dime and end up blowing up the deal over, you know, you're buying $1 million house. What's $5,000?
Yeah, we just, I just dealt with that kind of situation. What we did is we presented an offer. Everything was everything that they wanted. It was actually $30,000 more than they were asking. Everybody was set, got a verbal from the seller's agent or the listing agent, you know, everything was good. Got a call back. Hey, we just got an offer higher than yours. But it was, this particular deal was cash as well. We turned this into cash. So that's some other tricks that, you know, we, for another time, but, it must've been maybe $5,000-$10,000 over. So, you know, they have a super clean deal, all cash, everything's great. They came back and almost blew up the deal by asking for another $5,000. Cause now I got to go to my client and be like, hey, these people are idiots. And they're just trying to milk us for like, they literally want to blow up a deal for $5,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of ridiculous. You know, take a good, clean offer, take the money and run, yeah. You know what you want to get, have your price in mind. You know, you want $800,000. Great. Take your $800,000 and just go, you know? So I think people don't, they want to see how high things they can go as well. I don't know. I'm not really a believer in that. I'm more like that should completely be pre-framed. How much do you want to get for your house before it even goes? You know, you want $1 million, you know, anything over that is gravy. Great. But you know, you get a clean, nice deal at $1 million, get out of here. Yeah. Yeah. That's what you wanted,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
You're just getting greedy and getting weird things and things can blow up now.
Yeah. And then now you, okay. You go another month without rent. What was that $5,000 worth it when the place rented for how much? Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of variables and things that could happen, you know? So, yeah.
I gotta say, I'm pretty excited about my place. It, it's legally there now since, according to Steve Tepper, he came out and take a look at it. ADU guy. Thank you.
Yeah.
He said that this is zoned for, up to a fourplex. So this lot that I'm getting is, I can build up to 4 units on it. Essentially, like if we were playing Monopoly, I could put 4 greenhouses on it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But not a hotel.
Yeah, right? You could be a slumlord, Steve.
I could be a slumlord. Yes. Always wanted to be a slumlord.
Slumlord. Yeah, yeah. I remember. Your dream coming true.
It's actually gonna happen. I like a lot. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and just being a single guy, I can divide it into keeping. One half of the house for myself, and literally at least in the first stage of the division, I can just put a wall up in the hallway and separate that as can create a duplex and have the second half of the house, the 2-bedroom, 1-bath, I can turn into another little house.
Yeah.
A little kitchenette in there, you know, with some French doors. You got some pretty good decorating ideas as far as layout and what I should use. And I'm pretty excited about that. I think it, I don't think construction would take much longer than a couple of months.
Yeah.
And I can instantly get someone in there and either Airbnb or long-term rental it to offset some of the mortgage.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool. And the backyard's big enough to where I can in the future start building some other little units, apparently 80. Up to 4.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have so many options with that property. It's great, you know, which is hard to do in California, I'd say.
In the area I live, all the houses are built in like the 1920s to the 1950s, and then they just kind of stopped.
Yeah.
what this place is it was built in the 1920s, and in 2007, the guy bulldozed it and started all over. And, and so I'm getting in an area that's really... an older area with older pipes, and there's only one electrical outlet in each room, and it's tied to the switch on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, I have a 2008 house that has outlets everywhere and USB outlets and stuff. You know, everything's modernized, which is pretty cool. You know, no new roof, and you know, I don't got to worry.
No, you have no maintenance. Yeah, no maintenance for a while. So,
yeah, yeah. But yeah, I'm excited. That's going to be a fun project. I've needed one of these for a while. But
careful what you wish for.
I wanted to share real quick something that I found that I think our viewers might find useful. So if you guys are listening via the podcast, if you go click on the link in the show notes, it'll take you over to YouTube. And we've got a lot of followers, thousands every month that listen to us on via podcast. And our YouTube channel isn't really getting the traffic that I had hoped for. So if you guys, regular listeners, do us a favor, go over there, click subscribe and like, and that should kickstart the algorithm and get us going on the visual avenue. But anyways, I'll put this link in the show notes, and so we're looking at the United States of America here, and you can hover over areas and see what, generally speaking, what is a good time to buy, and generally speaking, what is not. And so, for example, we'll hover over one here in Illinois, Danville, Illinois. It tells you the value to earnings ratio, essentially. So like if you were buying a stock, this is for the housing market, right? So you look and you can see average earnings of a household here is $39,000. And the average price of a home in Danville, Illinois is $76,000. So in 1.94 years, that average person could purchase the house. Then you can hover over your area, wherever you are, if you're up in Seattle or over in California or New York or Boston, and you can find out what the average price is here in LA. So as opposed to a 1.94 ratio, we have a 13.89.
Perfect. I can starve myself for 14 years, pretty much.
Yeah. It's just eat your fireplace and slowly whittle away at your home.
Suck on my shoe. Yeah. Suck on my leather shoe.
But what you can do basically is plug in what your income is and what the property price is of the place that you're looking at, and you come up with your own value to earnings ratio. Right. So if you're in LA, you may not be 61,000 and the place you may looking at may not be 851,000. But that's what it is for the average person in the average home. You plug in your numbers for that. And the closer you get to zero, the better. And the closer you get to 17 or 20, the worse. Right.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I'll throw that in the show notes. I liked it a lot.
The guy What's the website, Steve?
It's called ReVenture. ReVentureConsulting.com.
Yeah.
So it'll be in the links, and you guys can just click on it there. And he's got a lot of other stuff. I watch his videos. He's got a bunch of interesting things. So you can tell like where people are moving in the country. So if people are if there's a mass exodus of New York, which there is, generally speaking, home prices should probably go down there because people are leaving and it's creating a lot of vacancies. Or if there's a mass migration to a place like Idaho, which they gained since the Cervasa sickness, the last stat, they gained 2.88% of their population since the Cervasa sickness started until about a month ago. And so I could see it with my folks' place up there. Everything around there is skyrocketing in price because they just had a mass movement of people into there, and they either have to build houses or they got to sell them so these new people can move in. So it's a really interesting site. I like it a lot. I was nerding out on it before we got started here, but pretty cool.
Cool.
So, but anyhow, thank you for coming on, Daniel. It was good to get the band back together.
Yes. We're gonna do it again very, very soon. So things are kind of starting to cool down. Well, kind of cool down a little bit. We'll see how it goes. So
but, I think you're just getting a little more experience, getting your feet wet, and you're kind of getting more efficient.
Oh yeah. That's exactly what it is. Efficiency. Yes.
Yeah. Good for you, man. I hope you kill it this year.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're well on our way.
Good. So. Good. All righty, man. Well, you have a good rest of the day, and thank you for watching.